Welcome in to the newest episode of the Hoth Hangout podcast. Glad to have you with us, joining us for episode 88 of the pod. Hard to believe we are inching closer and closer to that big episode 100. Going to be here in just about 3 months' time. Pretty crazy. It is upon us. But before we get started with today's episode, where we will be breaking down all things episode 7 of The Acolyte, titled Choice, I want to give you a quick reminder that if you're not yet subscribed to the Hoth Hangout channel over on YouTube, definitely check us out there for the video version of every podcast, as well as our reactions to the latest Star Wars episodes when they go live, including The Acolyte, of which you can find all 7 of our reactions to the 7 released episodes over on YouTube. I want to thank the 437 of you who are YouTube subscribers. Additionally, you can contact us via email at hothhangout@gmail.com with your Star Wars thoughts, questions, or otherwise, and we'd love to showcase them here on the pod. The Hoth Hangout podcast is findable wherever you get your podcasts, including both Spotify and Apple. And if you're listening on either of those platforms or any platform that allows you to leave a 5-star review, leave a 5-star review on the pod. We would appreciate it very much. And it does also allow it to be more easily discovered by other folks who love Star Wars as well. You can find us on the socials, whether it be TikTok, Instagram, or X. We are at Hoth Hangout. On each of those, the Hoth Hangout community Discord server is findable in the show notes of today's episode. Check it out and see everything that the Hoth Hangout Discord server has to offer and in store for you. As we begin today's discussion of The Acolyte Episode 7, I want to pose the question and put it out there. Will Mother Quarrel be in the finale? I believe that's probably one of the larger questions looming as we are approaching the finale, of which we are going to get in just 6 days' time. But before we get into our discussion of today's episode of episode 7 of The Acolyte, I should say, Joey, what's going on? How you doing?
Pretty good. We are all together again. You, me, and Gibbo. It feels like it's been a while since the three of us have been able to produce an episode together. So fortunately, Gibbo is feeling sick, so we want to give a quick little shout out to Gibbo. Hope you do feel better, but he is powering through and helping us on the producing side. So thank you, Gibbo, as always. But yeah, as much as for this episode, for the rest of Acolyte, we've only got, like you said, 6 days left. I don't know where we're going to feel like, what we're going to feel like at the end of it, either happy or sad or confused or angry or all of those things. But we are here for it. We can't wait to see what happens in the next week.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of a crazy week leading up to the finale. Like you mentioned, it's a lot of speculation, especially after episode 7, which didn't go over super well with a lot of Star Wars fans. And lots of questions looming, both about the episode and just kind of what it means for the rest of the show, being just next week's episode. So we'll talk about some of that speculation probably towards the end of today's episode. And as we progress into our discussion today, as we usually do here on the pod, want to showcase a couple pieces of news in the world of Star Wars, as well as touch on a few viewer comments and our polls from last week before we begin our discussion. In terms of the news this week, we've got two pieces, the first of which is in the world of video games as it relates to Star Wars Outlaws. It has officially gone gold, which I recently learned means that it is entirely completed and ready for launch. Star Wars Outlaws becomes available officially on August 30th. We've covered it a little bit here on the Hoth Hangout channel already and watched the trailer together, I believe, as well. But this is good news, Joey, in terms of the game being ready for release. It's all set to go. This is something that fans, I would assume, are pretty excited to hear, are they not?
Absolutely. When you have a game go gold like this, especially 2 months before the expected release of the game, just means that the game is fully vetted, it's fully tested, ready to go, get shipped out the door. Print, I don't know, do they still print out discs? I have no idea. I'm digital only now, so I have no idea if there's actually physical copies of this game that'll be out. But either way, they're all ready for it. And I think you and I are the same, where we have been kind of up and down with this game because it seems really cool, but then they throw it behind a paywall where you can't even do one of the Jabba missions. So this is like the love-hate type of relationship with this particular game. Right now, I'm excited because now it's gone gold and now we know that it's fully ready to go. So right now I'm on the upswing. So maybe I do pre-order and buy it for August 30th.
some Star Wars Outlaws live streams in the future of the Hoth Hangout channel. Who says no? We'll have to see if that's in our future plans for the channel as well. But let us know down in the comments or on the socials if you're planning on picking up a copy of Star Wars Outlaws and playing it, and what you're most excited for the release of that game. Again, that comes out in 50 days' time from the time of this recording. So be on the lookout for it coming to a store/digital store near you. The other piece of news we wanted to showcase today is related to the world of Star Wars cards. This in particular, the Star Wars Unlimited TCG. The new release comes out 2 days from the time of this recording on July 12th. And the name of the first set was Shadows of the Empire. But what is the name of the second set, Joey, that comes out in 2 days' time?
Yeah, the next one is being called Shadows of the Galaxy. So though this set is going to be mainly based around bounty hunters and smugglers, if you see in the video version of the podcast here, we have a couple of pieces of art. These are actual pieces of the art on the cards themselves. We have Moff Gideon. We also have the Mandalorian as well. So these particular two were... They are leaders. If you kind of remember the box break we did, Ben, there are things called leader cards, and then there's some location cards. So Moff Gideon and the Mandalorian are actually leader cards that you can get. These two particular art pieces are only available in the pre-release version of the packs, which are currently available. But for general release, it's going to be coming out on the 12th, so a lot of people are excited for it. I actually went to a shop to kind of ask around to see what the hype was. So they were actually holding an event already for this set. So like I said, there are pre-releases that they kind of go out. And it's just like any TCG game with like Pokemon or Yu-Gi-Oh! Or so you could actually, this is like a tabletop game that you could have, battle against another player essentially. But for me, on the collector side, I just like having the art. I like having the cards themselves. So look out for a new video probably coming out in the next week where you and I, or just I, will be opening a box of this as well, just like we did in the first set.
Nice. Yeah, the box break videos are always just a fun chill time. And as someone who like admittedly knows probably far less than you do about Star Wars TCG, kind of that whole world, I'm just sitting there admiring, like, ooh, look at that one. Oh, look at that one. That one looks neat. So
yeah, I'm not very far from that either. That's exactly where I'm at with it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, like you said, box break coming soon here on the Hoth Hangout YouTube channel. Check it out, those of you on YouTube, or those of you listening on audio, check out the YouTube video coming soon of the box break. So. We've got a couple viewer comments to showcase today from, I know these are from at least the last week, maybe even the last 2 weeks, if I'm not...
No, this is all last week, actually.
Wow, okay,
this is all last week's episode.
We've got, what, like 4 or 5 comments in total, and so, yeah, I mean, that speaks a lot as to, you know, kind of the amount that people have been watching The Acolyte. I feel like the amount of... Especially folks on YouTube who have been chiming in with their comments in recent weeks is kind of far more than we would typically get on an episode. So it's been fun to get to, you know, communicate back and forth with a lot of new folks over in the comment section with their thoughts about the episodes in recent weeks. But yeah, last week I was traveling. I was away on vacation, and so I was unable to watch the episode with you. So you soloed that episode last week. Great job doing that once again as well. And that's what our first comment here is from. I am Bevan Lee. I'm maybe mispronouncing that username, but I am Bevan Lee said, great episode, Joey, with a little set of nice emojis there to follow. Similarly, Jose, in response to the episode that you did last week, said, I think Sol did the accident at Brendok. Obviously, we know the answer to that now, and that's like, kind of correct, I would argue. I mean, yeah, more or less. So obviously we'll be talking about that a lot in today's episode, but shout out to those two folks for their comments as well. We had another comment from Lord Galvatron, a frequent commenter on the podcast we were going to showcase. Lord Galvatron said, great solo episode, Joey. Question of the week response. I don't think Sol will turn to the dark side, but he does have a dark side. which is whatever happened on Brindock, which they teased for 3 straight episodes, by the way. Annoying. I mean, yeah, this is something I can pose to you, Joey. Does it feel like Sol has a quote-unquote dark side?
The way that he was portraying him, most definitely, there was a lot of, I wouldn't say necessarily a dark side, but he was doing things that would lead him towards that. A lot of emotion, for instance. We know what emotion can get you. You just don't, as a Jedi, that's something you don't really hone in on or really acknowledge at all. And maybe that is one of the flaws of the Jedi, that, you know, if that's something that they're not supposed to even talk about. They talk about emotional attachments all the time. I think Andara even mentions that in this particular episode. So I think maybe not full on the dark side, but he has those tendencies. He's been leaning towards that way. And especially with at the end of this particular episode that we were reviewing, he basically handcuffs May, right? And tells her, like, oh, we gotta talk. I mean, this it doesn't feel very Jedi.
Right, yeah. Yeah, more emotion than we're used to seeing, like you said, than kind of the typical Jedi stance. But thank you to Lord Galvatron for that comment. And yeah, I would say it was a little bit annoying, like waiting for the 3 episodes. but we got it this week, didn't we? And but back in regards to last week's episode, episode 6 of The Acolyte, Kid Caduceus commented, I think Sol will either die or leave the Order. Or the last line of the last episode will be, I am Sol Skywalker.
All right.
Wouldn't that be quite the big
twist?
The rug under the feet pulling. yeah. No, I don't know. I feel like I would be surprised if they kill off Sol at the end of the season. But we'll see.
Because there really wouldn't be much left to do if he was gone.
Yeah, he's been, I mean, for as emotional as he acted in episode 7, he's been one of the brighter parts of the show, I would argue. Just the actor's portrayal of the character. So I don't know if they ever have a hope of doing like a season 2 or something. To get rid of Sol now would feel, I don't know, I'd be like, ah, we're not going to get him anymore. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
Anyway, shout out to Kid Caduceus, another frequent commenter on the podcast. We appreciate you. Our last comment today is from another frequent commenter, Spy on Sports. Spy on Sports said, I think Sol has a plot twist coming. I think it will be a redemption story. Vernestra may be the one that has a dark side, as we possibly learn that she was Chimer's Jedi master. She may have masterminded the events on Brindock to prevent her former Padawan, Chimer, from obtaining the power of 2, Osha and May, from the Witch's Coven. This feels like a fun fan theory. I mean, I would even throw, after having seen episode 7, like almost throw Andara kind of in the same boat as Vernestra.
Sure,
like,
yeah.
Both doing things that seem very un-Jedi-like, like electing to not tell the council about very, what would seem, crucial things. So, you know, I could see Vernestra being bad. I could even see Andara being bad. We don't really know what's going to come next week. So, all that being said, lots of fun fan theories out there at the moment regarding Mother Coral, Vernestra, Andara. There's, I guess, many different directions the rest of the show could go. But
and some of them not fun. But
right, and some of them not fun, yeah. nonetheless, let us know if you have any fun fan theories about what the conclusion of this show will look like, and keep the comments coming. We appreciate them very much, and we'll showcase some of them on next week's episode of the podcast, which, by the way, I don't know if now is a good time to mention or not, but we have a special announcement about next week's episode of the podcast that we'll talk about at the end of today's episode. So stay tuned for the end of today's podcast, when there'll be a special announcement about next week's episode of the podcast. A little bit of a teaser right there. So to conclude our talk, before we begin our discussion of episode 7 of The Acolyte, we posed last week during the podcast, will Sol turn to the dark side? The folks over on YouTube voted resoundingly no at 85% no, 15% yes. And then the folks over on Twitter even more resoundingly voted no, at 93% no and 7% yes. So seems like most people are in agreement that Sol is not going to turn to the dark side, even though he has some, you know, what we would call like gray at best tendencies with, mm-hmm. with kind of the way he acts emotionally. But all in all, people are leaning more towards no on that note. And so stay tuned for this week's community question, community poll, which you can cast your vote and have your voice be heard on the YouTube community tab, on the Hoth Hangout channel, or on the Hoth Hangout Twitter, or X, I should say, formerly known as Twitter. Again, stay tuned to both of those platforms if you're interested in voting in this week's poll and having your voice heard in this week's poll. So check it out. The time has arrived, Joey. It's time for our episode 7 discussion of the Acolyte. Again, the episode was titled Choice. And I noted that just looking at the episode titles, they all are either like the slash titles where it's like one thing or another. And the episodes that don't have a slash title in them are singular titles that are oftentimes tied to another episode in the show. So this one, obviously being a rehashing of episode 3, episode 3 was also one of those episodes that was just a singular word. If I'm not mistaken, I believe it was Destiny just off the top of my head. But you had Destiny for episode 3, Choice for episode 7. I guess my general thoughts about the episode before we begin our specifics discussion is that it felt... Obviously, there's a lot of negative sentiment going around about this episode, and I think it's fair to understand why, to say the least. I think what might be one of the more under-talked about points that this episode kind of did for me was that it shifted the direction of the show when we're really not left with much time with the show in general. We had episode 3, which was resoundingly, you know, the most critiqued and least liked episode of The Acolyte. Things felt like they were starting to move in a good direction. Like with episode 5 in particular was probably the best episode of the show. At least it was my favorite episode. And it felt like it received less critical feedback. You know, we're moving in this direction of learning more about Chimere. We've had this big reveal. We're learning more and more about his motivations. And then it's like, boom, 180. We're back to the flashback episode. And it kind of just felt like we regressed a little bit back to, I guess, a part of the show that left a lot of fans with a bad taste in their mouth. Did you have a similar experience, a different experience? What were your overall thoughts on the episode?
When I realized that this was going to be a flashback episode, I realized that we're not going to see Chimere at all in this episode. So there, right there, I was like, I'm not going to like this episode as much, right? Because my buddy Manny is not here. But like you said, episode 3 being the most criticized one of the season up to this point, now going to relive it from Sol's point of view, I was hoping that it would give a little bit more aha, you know, moments where mm-hmm. you would see it and you're like, okay, this all makes sense. I understand why this happened. This is, you know, so it was filling in these gaps, right? But it feels like, unfortunately, it kind of did the opposite, where it brought up more things that kind of didn't make... It was more like the things that they did fill in the gaps with didn't make sense in Star Wars time. Mm-hmm. Now, I understand if they're trying to shift the paradigm, if you will, a little bit about the Jedi. I think this is probably the biggest criticism that most would have, if they have any criticism at all about this episode, is that just the thought processes of the Jedi in this particular episode just did not seem like something that they would normally do. Right. So, and we'll get into that a little bit more. But so I think that is where the beginning and the end of this episode lays, is just the way the Jedi act during this episode. And I just can't, and it's very hard for me to even get away from thinking of that as well. For the most part, I think you and I have been very open-minded for this series. But I think this was the episode when we're both like, I don't know, man. You know, so yeah. I think that's just how it came to be. There is still one more episode left. There is still a shot, you know, that this becomes much better. But up until this point, I'm just like you said, the momentum was going so well. You know, we were discovering more about Chimere, and just that entire story was very intriguing. And then you just completely went back to episode 3, one that we already didn't like. as much, I should say. And we got even more of the confusion that we got from back then.
Right. Yeah. It's definitely a little bit frustrating as a fan, like having, you know, practically the same episode just told from a certain point of view, if you will. I mean, obviously there was a little bit of new stuff more towards the end of the episode, but it just felt like this whole episode could have been condensed into like a 5-minute add-on to episode 3, or maybe 10 minutes, but it, you know, just seeing everything from the exact, everything that happened from a different perspective, you know, when you're at the second to last episode of the show. Now, if the show would have been like 16 episodes, I could easily see justifying, you know, having an episode like this in addition to the episode 3, even if I wasn't really a fan of either episode. Just but in terms of storytelling, it's like we're at the second to last episode and you're using this to tell a backstory, which, by the way, the conclusion of the backstory was supposed to be like the aha moment of this season. Like, that's what we've been wondering. And it felt like, what? You know, that was like the major feeling at the end of the episode. So again, we'll talk more of that as we go throughout our discussion of the episode. But just to kind of kick off our general sentiments about episode 7, that's kind of where it left us. But it opens up and the Jedi, oh, we see them on Brendok. They've been there for 7 weeks. It's a little bit unclear to me how what they were doing was connected to their searching for the Vergence that they called it. But they're like collecting moss and they're using like metal detectors. And I don't really expect that we'll get an explanation for exactly how that works, but I just thought it was kind of like a, I guess, an odd way of depicting that they're searching for this thing, you know, on this planet, which is largely unknown to them. And
it was a Vergence detector. You get that off eBay, yeah. I think.
Yeah. Yeah, Star Wars eBay back in the day. But yeah, I mean, to go off of that, a Vergence, we know, is a concentration of force energy centered around a location, of the location in this case being Brendok. And it can also create life as seen on Brendok. And so we were actually watching the episode, and this is just me admitting, like, that I was ignorant of the fact that this word had even been used specifically in Star Wars before. I found out after the fact through watching other, you know, content on the episode 7 synopsis that Qui-Gon uses this word, Vergence, to refer to his discovery of Anakin on Tatooine. So it's a very purposeful choice, actually, that they use the word Vergence. It's another way of, you know, comparing whatever Mei and Osha are what Anakin is going to be. So, I mean, I think that's a pretty intentional choice. I think it's one that a lot of Star Wars fans, I think, for good reason, would take issue with. I mean, if I'm being honest, it's kind of something I would probably take issue with. It's like, here's this whole Skywalker saga centered around this boy, a Vergence in the Force, who was more or less born of the Force. You know, his status as the Chosen One, his fall to the dark side, and his eventual triumph of evil because of the belief that his son had in him, that there was still good in him. Like, this is what Star Wars is. It's the story of Anakin Skywalker, like episodes 1 through 6. And now you've got these two other people who are essentially the same thing as Anakin. I mean, they're like his Force sisters, if you want to think about it that way. So it's like, well, what does this mean for the legacy of Anakin Skywalker or Star Wars as a whole, really? I think that's a question a lot of people are having. It's not one that I'm like inherently critical of just for the fact that it exists. But it's one that I feel like needs a little bit of answering. Like, why is Anakin's specialness so special in the prequel trilogy if two other people are the same thing? You know what I mean? Did it leave you feeling that way at all?
I mean, I definitely had those thoughts that it would undermine what the entire storyline of Anakin. But at the same time, it's a universe. You know, just because it's happened in one place doesn't mean that is the only place it could ever happen. Now, if this story I'll admit it. If this story was a little bit better, maybe people wouldn't have such a huge deal with it, you know? I wonder if that is one of the big things, is that they're seeing this and they're like, well, this is just not, you know, a lot of people just are not enjoying this show. So they're kind of throwing it on top of it as well, where they're just like, well, this is, you know, in addition to it not being a good show, it's, you know, rewriting all this history and all this. And it's just an argument point for them as well. But I do get why people would be upset about it. You know, the people hold this franchise, you know, very close to their heart. And if anything changes out of, let's look at the sequel trilogy, for God's sakes. That is definitely one of the things that people just completely will hammer because of, you know, how Luke was during that entire trilogy. So these are the types of things that fans will get, you know, get behind, go against. And I personally, for me though, I get it, but as you know, I'm more of like, okay, well, that, I mean, yeah, okay, I get it. It happened here. It happened with Anakin. Okay. You know, I can let it go. So I didn't feel too much against it, but I also do recognize why people would.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I can appreciate what you said too. Like, on the surface, I don't really have an issue with there being other vergences in the universe of Star Wars. I mean, I think the only part that I take issue with is like, if the Jedi did or didn't know about it, you know what I mean?
Sure.
So just like on the surface, like the fact that there is another vergence isn't necessarily something that I would take issue with, just kind of what the implications of that might be for the Jedi Council, both in this time period and 80 years after this time period. So, just thought that was worth saying as well. But shortly after that, Sol finds these twins. We see them arguing from this different POV than we saw in episode 3. And it's funny, I didn't know if it was like more or less creepy. I feel like it was less creepy the way it was depicted in this episode.
Right.
It was like him stumbling upon them rather like it than it seeing he was like tracking them or something like that. But he ends up following them and he sees this conversation, this argument they're having, which eventually, you know, leads to him discovering this castle on the center of this mountain where these witches live, the Brendok witches. And this is where he sees Mother Anasea, Mother Coral. And so he reports this back to the other three Jedi, including Torben, Endara, and Kelnaka, and they all go to visit the Coven of Witches together. And this is when, you know, Sol is trying to get Endara to make the point that, like, we need to test Mae and Osha so that we can, you know, bring them back to Coruscant and have them trained because they're Force sensitive, as he's seen. Which, by the way, did you find it odd at all in the scene that happens before the Jedi actually enter? Endara is saying to them, like, I need to do this on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And Sol's like, no, we need to go with you. And she's like, okay, you can come. like it didn't feel like there was any, like, you know,
reason or pulling rank or anything.
Right. I was like, oh, okay. I mean, she changed her mind pretty quickly on that, but all right. So, you know, obviously we know how this meeting goes down, but the one aspect of it that was different was we got to actually see what was happening inside Torben's mind, you know, when he's taken over and his eyes turn black. And Mother Anasea takes over his mind and you know, he's confessing that he wants to go back to Coruscant. Which, by the way, like, Torben's character in this episode, I found to be, like, very whiny. Like, your whole, like, you're a Jedi, and, like, you're spending the whole episode being like, I just want to go home. I just want to go back to Coruscant. I just want to go home. I'm like, dude, why are you a Jedi?
Right. And I will say, this part here with Mother Anasea getting in his mind, it was, for me, was probably one of the better parts of this episode, because you got to see what it was that she was doing to him. Mm-hmm. You know, so you're able to see, you know, her magics and what, you know, what she's actually doing to get into these people's heads. So I thought that was kind of cool, you know, because when you just see the eyes go black, you have zero idea context of what's going on. So this one was actually, this part was actually pretty cool for me.
Yeah. Did it feel like the way it was done to you, was Like it just felt like, you know, felt like she was talking a lot about like desire and what he wants. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of like these dark side terminology, if you will.
Yeah.
But then like what it was centering around was not like him wanting to like betray the Jedi or like follow a Sith ideology or like do something against the Jedi code, like, I don't know, like have a girlfriend or, you know, like I'm just something that breaks the rules essentially. But the thing she was focusing on was just like him not wanting to be there. Like I get it. And also at the same time, I was like, this feels like it would have been more impactful in a way if it was something that felt more important to the plot. Mm-hmm. You know, does that, if that makes sense, or not necessarily the plot, but just like to Torben as a character. Like if he has like some longing for something that's like against the Jedi code. Right. But I thought it was done well. I can agree with you on that. I just thought it would have been like, you know, if he wanted
more meaningful.
Yeah. Other than just centered around his desire to not be there. I was like, oh, okay. Like I get it, I guess. But
I think this particular dialogue can be parallel to Kimir and Osha's dialogue in, you know, the previous couple episodes, mm-hmm. where he also uses the word desire. So mm-hmm. I think that's very deliberate, the use of that word. Maybe not even so much of, you know, what that person desires, whether it is just to be home or whether it is to, you know, swim in the pool with Chimera, whatever. You know, I think that's the important part of it, is that word desire and what it means to that person. So right. Whether it is, you know, something as you know, you and I would call kind of silly, just like, I just want to go home. It's his desire after all. So yeah. I think that's the important part that we take away from this scene.
Sure, yeah. Well, and by the end of the episode, you know, he says, I've fortified my mind. So I guess, you know, whatever happens here more or less shifts his perspective or his experience of wanting to go home, that he's able to withstand it when it tries, you know, when they're about to try to do it again at the end of the episode. But kind of moving on from that, Sol believes Osha is meant to be his Padawan for some reason, like following this encounter. Like he's just very determined to like rescue these girls, which I think is very admirable and like a character quality about Sol that I like and I admire and I enjoy that is part of his character. But at the same time, I think I feel like the justification for Sol feeling so strongly about saving Mei and Osha, I don't know, maybe I'll ask it as a question rather. Do you feel like that's just like who he is? Or I don't know. It almost feels like there should be like a little bit more of backstory with why he so desperately wants them to be rescued. I mean, maybe he's just like a really good guy. He's got a heart for kids. I don't know.
Right. Indara teased him earlier on in the episode about him not having a Padawan. And I don't think that's where it stems from, but that was there for a reason too, you know? So I wonder if there's a little bit of him really trying to make it happen as well. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily. I mean, he's a Jedi, so he's supposed to be good. He wants to help these kids out for sure. But maybe there's a little bit of him that wants a Padawan. He wants to train another. And, you know, things like little jabs from Indara, you know, just only make him want it more. Maybe that's his desire. I don't know.
Right.
That's just, like I said, I think that line was in there, or that interaction with Indara was there purposefully, where she's like, you know, you don't even, that's why you don't have a Padawan. But now he is like, gung-ho wants this, you know, wants Osha to be his Padawan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good point to make. I didn't even think about putting those two things together. And I think there's definitely something to be said for, you know, the reasoning for that scene with Indara, like you said, kind of, you know, hinting us as an audience to think, well, you know, maybe he really does want a Padawan just that bad. And he's, you know, maybe that's extra motivation for him to save the girls or something. So, of course, you know, they both come in one by one to be tested. And Mei has this quote. She comes in first before Osha, and they're talking about the Ascension. They're asking her kind of basically just what it is and what it entails. And he has this quote where she says, everyone must walk through fear. Everyone must be sacrificed to fulfill their destiny. pretty powerful coming from like an 8-year-old or however old they're supposed to be in this scene. What did you make of that quote, Joey?
I don't want to be a part of that coven because that is scary, scary stuff to have a child recite back
right.
to you. I think it is exactly what it is that, you know, that who was it? I think it was Andara that said, you know, they have these rituals, you know, that is very common amongst, you know, certain people of different planets. And this is just theirs. As creepy as it is, and we've talked about the horror vibe this show sometimes comes off with. I think this is just an example of it. Is, you know, to have a child say the word sacrifice is a little unnerving to me.
Yeah, definitely so. Well, after she and her sister are both tested, most of the OSHA scene we actually saw in episode 3, so very little of it was shown in episode 7, but. It's Torben who says the blood test results are in and that the symbiotes are the same between the twins, indicating that they are not merely just sisters, but like literally the same consciousness that was split at some point in their, you know, conception by the Force, if you will. So, you know, again, kind of another equivocation to Anakin being a virgins, they being a virgins, you know, created by the Force. And the other funny part about this scene that I think I laughed when we were watching it. He says, like, you know, the symbiotes are so not only both high, but they're the same. And then he says, very force sensitive. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, that is like,
give us a little credit here, guys.
Yeah. It felt like it was written by someone who like watched Star Wars for the first time a couple weeks ago. They're like, okay, what else? Very, very, very force sensitive. You know, it's like, okay. It's like so on the nose that it was like a little bit annoying. But so, you know, after they've been tested back at the coven, Mother Coral is in fear that May and OSHA are going to be taken. And so he makes May upset on purpose to try to, you know, provoke her to smash a door to prevent people from leaving. I just thought
here's where the questions start.
yeah. Here's where the questions start. So she makes her mad. She's like trying to provoke her. May's like, all right, no one's leaving. OSHA's staying here. So she smashes the door. They incite all the other witches to kind of like rally with them against the Jedi who are going to be here soon. And then there's the scene with the fire, Joey. The fire, which we thought was purposefully set by May, which you could argue it still maybe initially was purposeful, like the burning of the thing. Of course, she didn't really intend for the whole place to burn down, we now know. Also, there was more, I don't know what we're going to call it, like fluid that could have caused the flames to combust. So I guess the initial fire makes slightly more sense now. I'm still not sure like how the whole stone fortress burned down, but I guess it makes more sense how the initial fire could have started. But there's this very intentional, purposeful scene where it shows her trying to put the flames out. So even this big thing, which we've been, you know, told throughout the course of the show that May is to blame for the cause of this fire, which she is, but ultimately, like, it wasn't something that she did on purpose. Like, her intention was never to burn the whole place down or to, like, you know, kill her sister, really. Just, I guess, to trap her in the room. So, you know, an important revelation in the scheme of things. I guess it makes May seem slightly less psychotic. I don't know. I don't know what the word is to use, but as the Jedi are reapproaching at this point in time, I believe it's Mother Anasea who says to them, "Someday, those noble intentions you all have will destroy all of the Jedi in the galaxy." What did you make of this quote? I'm curious what your thoughts were on this one.
I mean, she's foreshadowing, obviously, and you know, we all think of Order 66 right away when we think all the Jedi being wiped from the galaxy. Mm-hmm. I think that was, you know, a little lob for us to be like, we know what that is, you know, and I think, you know, the noble intentions. I like that. I like how they use that, because I mean, in all, that's what this entire episode was noble intentions. This was supposed to be, you know, Sol just wanting to get the girls to safety. This is just them trying to figure out what's going on with these virginsons on this planet. Noble, noble, noble. But we come across these witches, and this, you know, it just seems like it just completely just goes out of control here pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And actually right at this point here that happens next here. So I think that line, although very, very pointed, you know, obviously, you know, I think they were referring to Order 66. I think it's a good line. I like the line, but you know, obviously without any context, you're just like, okay, well, it's a pretty good threat.
Yeah. 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 Of course, like you mentioned, relating to the fall of the Jedi, that will inevitably happen as we know in the future. I really want to dive into this next part because I think it left a lot of people confused, including myself. May runs out. Sol, for some reason, thinks she's Osha. Not to be like dense, but I don't understand how Sol continues throughout the show to mistake May and Osha. Especially like in the flashback scenes when there are two different actors playing the girls, and like visually they have different facial characteristics.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And so for us to like be able to look at like one of them and be like, oh, that's May, and Sol, a Jedi who should be able to probably sense this, to look at her and identify her as the wrong twin. It's like, Sol, come on, buddy. You know, like, I'm like not entirely sold by that. But the real part of this scene I wanted to focus on, of course, was the whole smoke bird demon thing that Mother Anisea turns into. So before we dive into it, she turns into this thing, turning into smoke. May is also beginning to turn into smoke, which Sol thinks that's Osha. And Sol thinking, or I guess seeing that May is like disintegrating practically, like, well, I'm going to do the only logical thing here and try to prevent her from what he thinks is death, I guess. And so stabs Mother Anisea, which, by the way, we now are officially back on the lightsabers are lethal part of this is part of Star Wars, right. And then she proceeds to tell him in her dying breath that she was going to let May go. Osha go. And so I really feel somewhat confused, like what was even happening. I don't know. I honestly don't have an answer to this. Do you have any sense of kind of what was going on with the turning into the demon smoke bird thing?
No, I have no theory of what it was happening, what was trying to happen. The only reference that we have is a little bit later on when Mother Coral does it and she kind of just disappears. So mm-hmm. I don't know if that was her attempt to get her and run. Because, I mean, we know that's May, right?
Mm-hmm.
So was that her attempt to take the one twin that was not going to go with him and just kind of just book? And that's kind of it. I mean, it seems kind of lame, you know, in the grand scheme of things, but maybe that she was just trying to protect her. You know, she realized what was happening. You know, these witches know, you know, they have the, we call it the force, they call it the thread, right? They know what's going on. So maybe they're able to sense certain things. And she was like, we need to get out of here right now. So maybe that's all that she was doing. Because, like I said, that's what Mother Coral does a little bit later. She just kind of bounces, and that's it. So maybe that's all it was that she was trying to do.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just wondering, like, why she wouldn't have just been like, "Hey, guys, let's stop it. Let's, you know, let's right, talk. Yeah. Let's talk this out." She's like the pacifist one, after all. It's like, you know, mm-hmm. let's have a conversation about this. But I don't know what happened, and she turns to smoke. May starts to turn to smoke. Sol kills Mother Anisea. She says she was going to let Osha go. So obviously there's a lot of guilt resulting from this, and Sol carries this not only with him after the fact now, but through the next 16 years of the show. And so Mother Coral gets enraged. She has this like battle cry she does, and begins to fight Soul, and Soul is not igniting his lightsaber and kind of refusing to fight her. And so shortly thereafter, she turns to smoke and disappears. So you're thinking, okay, what's going on? You learn right after that that Kelnaka has been possessed by the rest of the Coven of Witches, and maybe Mother Coral too. It was a little bit unclear to me. What is your feelings on this? Because if Mother Coral was also involved in the possessing of Kelnaka, wouldn't she have died with the rest of the witches when Indara like forced them out? So, that leads into our kind of question of the week this week. So maybe we can rehash that in a bit. But the witches, are doing their rotating thing, and they possess Kelnaka collectively, and so he then fights against both Soul and Torben together. So we got our Wookiee Jedi wish in this scene. Honestly, this was my favorite part of the episode, was getting to see this lightsaber duel go down. I mean, it was a little bit clunky, but that's kind of just because Wookiees are so massive. Huge. And so, the fight commences, and the one thing I was also going to focus on here, I wanted to ask you, it didn't feel like I saw, Kelnaka getting possessed by the witches, and I think my first instinct was, oh, like, he's not strong enough to resist that? Mm-hmm. Was that a thought that you had, or did it feel like it, I don't know, like it was it
I
was
think
just
at first fight? At first, when I thought it was just Mother Coral, mm-hmm. I was a little bit shocked at it, but then when you come to realize it was just the entire coven of witches possessing him, mm-hmm. then it's just like, okay, that's possible.
Yeah, just like a strength in numbers sort of thing, probably.
Exactly. The power of many, right? Isn't that one of their things?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. this battle goes down. Torben has his face all scratched up. More or less, Kelnaka's like kind of winning the fight before Indara steps in and sort of forces the Coven of Witches out of his mind. And again, this is, for me, the most confusing part of the episode. By forcing the witches out, they all die? ?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't really have words for this part. I rewatched this a second time with my fiance today, and she looks at me at this part and goes, "What? How did they die?" Like, you know what I mean? It was kind of one of those moments. I don't want to elaborate too much on it, just because, ultimately that's just, I didn't feel like it made sense. Did you feel like you had any sense of kind of what the decision behind having the witches go down that way was?
My only thought was maybe they're not dead. That was my only kind of hope. I found myself doing that a lot this episode, where I kind of gave reasons. I tried to make logic out of what I was watching. And that was definitely one of those times when I wanted it not to be like, okay, they can't be dead. There's no way that she just killed all of the entire coven in one fell swoop like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And moreover, it kind of sheds light on a mystery of the show. This whole time it's like, oh, like the Jedi killed all the witches somehow. And then you find out, oh, they just died of overexertion. I don't know, So definitely one of the more confusing points of the episode for me.
I did want to just mention Padme died of a broken heart. Just one.
That is a great point. And also, like, worth putting that out there, that's that's an overlooked kind of weird part of Revenge of the Sith. Yeah, that's a good point.
Just insane.
Then the next scene, when Mei and Osha are on the bridge, we see the scene from a different perspective, and that Soul is the one holding up both the sides and ultimately makes the decision that he can save one but not the other, and chooses Osha, which is also where we can presume a lot of his guilt about this whole thing comes from. I think my And I can overlook this because this more so is a storytelling device for his guilt. So this one doesn't bother me quite as much. But the rationalist Star Wars fan in me was like, why doesn't he just force lift the girls instead of force lifting the bridge and like struggling to do it? You know, they both weigh like, you know, I don't know, 60, 70 pounds. It's like he literally lifted Osha from falling over the cliff in episode 1 or 2 or whenever that was. So I don't know. Again, I don't have an issue with this from a plot telling device because it was meant to progress or to cause guilt in the character of Sol for letting one of them go. So I understand it from that perspective. Again, from like a rational thing, I was like, just like horse lift them both up, you know, Sol? But ultimately, makes the decision to save Osha. May presumably falls to her death, which is why he carried this guilt for so many years. And so the aftermath of this entire thing is that Indara makes the decision that they will, quote unquote, tell the truth, which means that May burned down the fortress and that's all they're going to share. Another big question here, like, there's got to be more to Indara. Mm-hmm. There was hints throughout this episode that, like, she was acting, like, a little, you know, sneaky or suspicious. Like, I kept getting a little flavors of that, especially in the scene where May and Osha were being tested earlier in the episode. Like, what motivation do you have, Master Indara? What motivation does she have to not want to tell the council what happened? Like, this is the linchpin of the entire show. Like this is the thing that they've kept a secret. And the whole show, you're led to believe that they just, like, you know, unjustifiably wiped out this race of Brendok witches. And then you see the episode, and you're like, well, they all just kind of died, except for one who they killed because Sol thought she was killing another girl. So it was, like, in defense of a child, the one person you killed. And that's what you're not wanting to tell the council? I'm left feeling, like you said at the top of the episode, the motivations of the Jedi, or rather the portrayal of the Jedi as, like, not being a force of good, like the peacekeepers of the galaxy, so to speak. It just, like, my main question is, why is the first instinct of pretty much every Jedi in this show to, like, oh, let's not tell the council? You know what I mean? I don't really get that, but what did you think about Indara? Do you think there's more to her than we're being led to believe?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. So with Indara, she was steadfast, the most solid Jedi for, I feel like, almost the entire episode until right here, mm-hmm. when everything she was saying, you know, why would you throw this little girl's dreams away? I'm like, what is that? Since when does that even matter? You know, when is I appreciate that thought, but at the same time, that's not something that she should base a decision off of, you know, especially this decision, whether mm-hmm. or not to tell the council the High Council about this. I couldn't understand why that the entire time she's telling Sol to not be emotional. And then the last thing she does in the episode is make an emotional type of decision.
Yeah.
You know, a decision based off emotion. It just doesn't make sense to me. And, you know, you even mentioned it, I believe, during the reaction. Torben, you know, this wasn't really his doing. I mean, maybe there was a little, you know, maybe he was, you know, he definitely had part of it. He was the one that kind of, you know, went crazy and just like, all right, we got to go get it. This is what's going to get us back to Coruscant. And, you know, I get maybe that's where his thought process was there, but I mean, to hold on to that after all of these years, you know, being in isolation for so long and then deciding I would rather die than to tell anybody about this. It just didn't make sense to me.
Yeah. I'm there with you. And I mean, I guess we can go straight into our episode grades. With all of these questions that we had about the episode, I guess for me, this is my, and again, if those of you who have never listened to the podcast before don't know how Joey and I kind of grade our episodes, we personally are like, if anything, Star Wars, you know, as good or bad as it might be, like, I feel like just the fact alone that it's new content for me merits like at least a 4 out of 10. Like, I don't feel like I'm ever going to hate something so much that I would ever give it lower than a 4 if it is Star Wars. I mean, maybe some fans out there would argue that this isn't Star Wars, but for me, that's why I would never go below that. So having said that, I'm going to give this episode a 5.5 out of 10. It's my lowest grade of the season. I did like it less than episode 3, which was previously my lowest grade of the season. Again, it just left me with so many questions, not understanding character motivations. The big two things being, why was this the big secret that was being held all season? And why were people willing to literally die rather than just tell the council? And then the other big thing being the Jedi being the bad guys. Like, why is the initial instinct of every Jedi, like, don't tell the council, like, we'll get in trouble? Like, what is the theoretical consequence of just telling them what happened? Like, we're at our council meeting. Hey, we had these witches, you know, we killed one of them because we were trying to protect this girl. Then the rest of them tried to, like, kill Kel Naka by taking over him. We protected him. And then all the witches just died. We didn't even kill them. And they tell the council, like, okay, like, we're glad you told us. Like, you're on probation for a month and then you're good. You know, like, it doesn't, like... Right. These aren't people who are going to, like, be executed for accidentally killing one person in order to defend a child. It's like, what was the bad thing that happened? I don't know. So anyways, I'll get off my soapbox. Sorry. For those reasons, I'm going 5.5. How about you?
Yeah, previously episode 3 was also my least favorite of the season. This is now my least favorite of the season. So I rated it at a 7 where... I gave 7.5 to episode 3, and I got a lot of flack for it because the grade was so high. But again, as Ben mentioned, we do enjoy our Star Wars, and for the most part, we like most Star Wars. But for this, I think the reason I didn't like it more is because of where it was in the season, especially because we had such good momentum going into this episode. With Chimer, with Osha and May, you know, with a Cortosis helmet. I mean, there was a lot of things that was happening going into this episode, and then to backtrack and fall back. If this was episode 4, I think I would have been better with it, you know, because we didn't have to wait for it. This the ultimate episode, and because this is supposed to be the banger, you know, this is supposed to be the one where, like, going into the finale, we're like, we're hype, we're ready to go. I don't have that feeling going into the finale. I have a little bit of anxiety. I'm a little bit worried about what we're going to see in the finale or what we're not going to see in the finale. So that for that reason, I gave it a lower score than episode 3. I could argue it to be like even a 6 or a 6.5 or whatever. I mean, these are all just numbers. Honestly, it doesn't really matter. But, you know, for the most part, that this... Although it was Star Wars, I get maybe they're really trying to, you know, have a different perspective of the Jedi. I appreciate that, you know, that they are, I think I read somewhere, like, you know, they're humans after all, other than Kel Naka. But, you know, so they do have their flaws and all that. But to have all those flaws at the same time with multiple Jedi, I don't necessarily buy that piece of it.
Yeah.
So for all those reasons, I'll give it this up.
Yeah, like, in principle, I'm not opposed to the Jedi being depicted in a more negative light. It feels like it needs to be, like, justified for them to be, like, making these poor decisions or these emotional decisions. And it just kind of feels like a little bit willy-nilly almost some of the time. But I guess let us know down in the comments what your thoughts were about the episode. I'm definitely going to be sharing some of this week's comments in next week's episode of the podcast. Particularly about Mother Coral. That's the one we want to pose to you today. Our viewer question of the week, feel free to respond down in the comments and over on the socials. Will Mother Coral be in the finale of The Acolyte? Let us know down in the comments, which also leads us to our surprise announcement we wanted to give in regards to next week's episode of the podcast, episode 9. It's going to be a live episode of the Hoth Hangout podcast. Fun stuff. So. If you're a longtime listener, if you're a new listener, we welcome you to join us next Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Eastern time. That is 6 p.m. Pacific time if you're over on the West Coast. And we're going to be doing a live breakdown of the podcast. Yeah, Givo in the podcast chat saying, no doubt it will be 2 hours long. Probably because it is a live. Yeah. Probably because it is a live episode, it's going to be a bit longer. But we welcome you to join us once again next week at 9 p.m. Eastern, Wednesday, July 17th, for our complete breakdown and synopsis of the Acolyte finale, as well as just the show as a whole. Get our thoughts, get your thoughts. That way we can communicate back and forth with one another as a community of Star Wars fans during the live episode of the podcast. So we are very much looking forward to that, and we'll hope to catch you all next week during it as well. Well, as we have just gone over the hour mark for the episode, now is a great time, as great a time as any, to let you know that if you're not yet subscribed to the Hoth Hangout channel on YouTube, definitely check us out there for the video version of every podcast, as well as all of our reactions to new episodes of any Star Wars shows, including the Acolyte episodes, which you can watch our reactions to now, available on YouTube. Thank you to the 437 of you who are subscribers. You can contact us via email, hothhangout@gmail.com, with your Star Wars thoughts, questions, or otherwise, and we'd love to showcase them here on the pod. Additionally, the Hoth Hangout podcast is findable wherever you get your pods, including both Spotify and Apple. And if you're listening on either of those platforms or any platform that allows you to leave a five-star review, leave a five-star review on the pod. We would appreciate it very much. And it also does allow it to be more easily discovered by other fans of Star Wars as well. You can find us at Hoth Hangout on all of the socials, whether it be Instagram, TikTok, or X, formerly known as Twitter. Check us out there on each of the socials and follow us for the latest Star Wars news. You can find the link to the Hoth Hangout community Discord server down in the show notes of today's episode as well. Check it out and see everything that the Hoth Hangout community Discord server has to offer. To conclude our episode today, Joey, any last final thoughts on Acolyte Episode 7 or any thoughts looking forward to Episode 8?
Up to this point, what a roller coaster this season has been. Both highs and lows. Maybe a couple more lows than we'd like to admit. But we're here. We'll get to the next week. We're going to do a live show I'm really excited about. So just stay tuned. We'll, it's going to be a fun time. We promise.
Through it all, as some of, as you mentioned, the highs and lows of this show has been, nonetheless, I still somehow do have hope for next week. So
me too. What is wrong with us? I agree.
I want to be genuinely shocked by something in the finale. That's my
like in one, a good way though. Like
in a yeah, good way. In a good way. In a good way. My one desire. So hopefully that. Ooh. Can. Did you like what I did right there?
Not the desire. Oh no. Not surprised.
Yeah. Yeah. Lastly, shout out and thank you to Givo for producing today's show, video, and assets, who would be able to save both of us from a broken bridge. I have no doubt. I have no doubt. Even when he's under the weather like he is today. Yeah. Shout out to Givo for sticking in there today after a long work week last week and feeling a bit under the weather. So we appreciate you, man. Thank you for all you do for the podcast. And thank you to all of you for listening to today's episode. We appreciate you very much. Shout out to George Lucas. Shout out to Dave Filoni. Shout out to, what are we doing this week? Like bird, raven, demon, smoke monsters? How does that sound?
Sounds scary, like I said before, but it's fine.
And Wookiee Jedi, who we finally got to see in action for the first time this week. So once again, we appreciate you all very much. Catch us next week in episode 89 of the podcast. Once again, that's Wednesday, July 17th at 9 p.m. Eastern, where we will be doing a live podcast on YouTube, breaking down the episode 8 and just the Acolyte as a whole. So we hope you can join us for that. Once again, thank you so much for listening. This has been episode 88 of the Hoth Hangout podcast, and we will catch you in the next one. And until next time, may the Force be with you.